5. Family. Charcoal study. I have a favorite memory of my father that I sometimes recall as a dream. In the dream, I am small. I have only recently learned to climb the ladder. The rungs are very far apart, and I cannot see them, so for a long time I was afraid I would miss a rung and fall. I had to learn not to be afraid, which is much harder than it sounds. I am very proud of having accomplished this.
Papa, I say,
running across the small attic room. This is, by my parents' mutual agreement, his room. My mother does not come here, not even to clean. It is neat anyhow. My father is a neat man. Yet it is permeated all over with that indefinable feeling that is him. Some of it is scent, but there is something more to his presence too. Something that I understand instinctively, even if I lack the vocabulary to describe it. My father is not like most people in our village. He goes to Whitehall services only often enough to keep the priest from sanctioning him. He makes no offerings at the household altar. He does not pray. I have asked him whether he believes in the gods, and he says that of course he does. Are we not Morona? But that is not the same thing as honoring them, he adds sometimes. Then he cautions me not to mention this to anyone else. Not the priests, not my friends, not even Mama. One day, he says, I will understand. Today he is in a rare mood, and for a rare once, I can see him. A smaller than average man with cool black eyes and large, elegant hands. His face is lineless, almost youthful, though his hair is salt and pepper, and there is something in his gaze, something heavy and tired, that shows his long life more clearly than wrinkles ever could. He was old when he married Mama. He never wanted a child, yet he loves me with all his heart. I grin and lean on his knees. He's sitting down, which puts his face in reach of my searching fingers. Eyes can be fooled, I have learned already, but touch is always sure.
You've been singing, I say.
He smiled. Can you see me again? I thought it would have worn off by now.
Sing for me, Papa,
I plead. I love the colors his voice weaves in the air. No, Ree child, your mother's home.
She never hears it. Please?
I promised, he says softly, and I hang my head. He promised my mother, long before I was born, never to expose her or me to the danger that comes of his strangeness. I am too young to understand where that danger comes from, but the fear in his eyes is enough to keep me silent. But he has broken his promise before. He did teach it to me, because otherwise I might have betrayed my own strangeness out of ignorance. And because, I later realize, it kills him a little to stifle that part of himself. He was meant to be glorious. With me, in these small private moments, he can be. So when he sees my disappointment, he sighs and lifts me into his lap. Very softly, just for me, he sings. I awoke slowly to the sound and smell of water. I was sitting in it. The water was nearly body temperature. I barely felt it on my skin. Under me, I could feel hard, sculpted stone, as warm as the water. Nearby was the smell of flowers. Hiraz, a vining plant that had once been native to the Marrow Land. Its blooms had a heavy, distinctive perfume that I liked. That told me where I was. If I hadn't been to Madding's place before, I would have been disoriented. Madding owned a large house in one of the richer districts of Wesha, and he had brought me here often, complaining that my little bed would give him a bad back. He had filled the ground floor of the house with pools. There were at least a dozen of them, carved out of the bedrock that underlay this part of shadow, sculpted into pretty shapes and screened by growing plants. It was the sort of design choice godlings were infamous for. They thought first of aesthetics, and lastly of convenience or propriety. Madding's guests had to either stand or strip and get into a pool. He saw nothing wrong with this. The pools were not magical. The water was warm because Mad had hired some mortal genius to concoct a mechanism that kept boiled water in the piping system at all times. Madding had never bothered to learn how it worked, so he couldn't explain it to me. I sat up, listening, and promptly became aware that someone was with me, sitting nearby. I saw nothing, but the breathing pattern was familiar. Matt? He resolved out of the darkness, sitting at the pool's edge with one knee drawn up. His hair was loose, clinging to his damp skin. It made him look strangely young. His eyes were somber.
How do you feel?
He asked. The question puzzled me for a moment, and then I remembered. I sat back against the side of the pool, barely feeling the throb of my old bruises, and turned my face away from him. My eyes still ached, so I closed them, though that didn't help much. How did I feel? Like a murderess. How else? Madding sighed.
I suppose it does no good to point this out, but what happened wasn't your fault.
Of course it did no good, and it wasn't true.
Mortals are never good at controlling magic, Ori. You weren't built for it. And you didn't know what your magic could do. You didn't intend to kill those men.
They're still dead, I said. My intentions don't change that.
True.
He shifted, putting the other foot into the water.
They probably intended to kill you, though.
I laughed softly. It echoed off the shifting surface of the water and sounded demented.
Stop trying, Mad. Please?